I don't think you'll be surprised, but I'm fascinated by what you do and what it represents. And I think it might be a bit esoteric for some people. And I don't see it that way because when you take a look, what is civilization? Is it the water pipe? Is it the highway? Or is it the law? And I think in many occasions, civilization, is about the law. It really is in many respects. Is that too esoteric for most people? Because, I mean, in the uncivilized, an uncivilized person, the law's nothing. It's nothing more than tissue paper. It's really about how we behave, and that law gives us a framework for that.
Absolutely, and that's the beauty of the American system, as we've experienced for over 200 years, that people's rights and responsibilities are set forth in the law. You know, the legislature passes the laws, the courts, you know, interpret the law and deal with, you know, the circuit courts deal with the people right there, you know, flesh and blood you know, the rubber meets the road, as it were. And, you know, that's where most people experience the law is through our circuit courts.
Right.
And I'm on the appellate court now, have been for the past year and a half.
And you took over for Judge Moore.
Yes. When Judge Moore was elected in 2016, then Chief Justice Carmeier in the Illinois Supreme Court assigned me to the appellate court, and I'm in the seventh seat on the 5th District Appellate Court.
All right, and so, but here's the thing. You're not running to retain the seat you're in now. You're actually running to another seat inside the appellate court. Is that correct?
Correct. Justice Richard Goldenhurst, who served for, I believe, three terms, 30 years, announced that he was not seeking retention. And so back in late September, I decided to run for his seat once it was announced it was vacant. And I'm seeking the voters' you know, stamp of approval to serve on the appellate court for a 10-year term. And right now I'm serving at the pleasure of the Illinois Supreme Court, but I really desire to be one of the voters' representatives on the court.
Right, and the difference that represents, I think.
Yes.
If nothing else in your mind. Because one of the reasons why I'm fascinated by what you do is because you pass judgment on your fellow human being by using the law as the tool. And I can't help but think that's uncomfortable. And then when you think about what you're specifically looking to do here now in the appellate court, is recognition that humans make mistakes and that there's a mechanism for rectifying it when it happens. And that's the position I see you as from an outside in looking in, that if I feel I've not gotten a fair shake, I've not gotten a fair break, that there's a mechanism for me to go to.
Correct. We are the intermediate court of review. So you appear in front of the trial court. You believe a mistake was made in the application of the law, or, you know, justice wasn't served, you have the right to appeal to the 5th District Appellate Court here in the southern 37 counties of Illinois. The courthouse sits in Mount Vernon. That's where I live. But, if you're in Williamson County, Alexander County, Saline County, you think things went wrong in the trial court, justice needs to be served, you have the opportunity to have the case reviewed by a three-judge panel on the appellate court. And many times we are the court of last review. Now, we have the Illinois Supreme Court.
Right. I'm going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Right. And in some cases go all the way. But the Illinois Supreme Court has the luxury of picking and choosing the cases they wish to hear based on, you know, whether or not there's a great dispute in the law, and they can only hear so many cases. But we, the citizens, have the right to appeal one step, and that is to the appellate court. And here in the 5th District, that's the southern 37 counties.
Judge Don Lowry, who was I've known for many, many years, and we've had many discussions on this and how he views this, and I always thought it was interesting. I remember sitting at the dinner table with him one night, and he says, ultimately, it's about an equal playing field for all people. And it's interesting because, you know, everybody kind of has a different, I guess, vernacular for it when you look at it, because I think about equality and some people think, well, yeah, but rich people can afford better attorneys than somebody who's poor. I mean, but ultimately, when you put on the black robe, that's your job. I mean, I almost think you ought to have a black and white striped shirt because you're an umpire of sorts with more power.
Right. You know, our job as judges, as the appellate court and the circuit judges, as well, whatever the level, is to be fair and impartial and apply the law. You know, do the best of our ability to apply the law. You know, the symbol of justice, you know, justice is blind. You know, Lady Justice with the scales. And that's what, you know, it doesn't matter to me who wins or who loses. Plaintiffs, defendants, you know, my job is to make sure folks are treated fairly under the law.
Right. Yesterday's the ruling by the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court, and I'm like, oh, that's an interesting ruling from those folks, because we've reached a point where there's some level of absurdity that we see from my standpoint, and we're going to go out of the state of Illinois so we don't put you in a precedent issue here. But in San Francisco, you sell or give somebody a plastic straw, we'll arrest you. While at the same time down the street, they're registering illegal aliens to vote. The law applies on both, and you're going, but this, you see a disconnect, right? Where you're a waiter, we'll give you a $1,000 fine if you put a straw in somebody's drink, plastic straw. While at the same time, oh, you want to come in the country illegally and you want to vote on the school board? Okay, we'll register you. And I think that drives people a little nuts.
Right, we depend upon the law being reasonable. Common sense plays a role.
You just use the word reasonable and common sense. I like hearing that.
Well, that's, you know, that's the foundation of our system. And when things get out of whack, you know, the judiciary, you know, the studies show the American people have the greatest confidence of the three branches of government in the judiciary, because we are to be fair and independent and reasonable. And when things get out of whack, decisions come down that to most folks do not seem reasonable, that's when, you know, we start losing the confidence of the citizens.
And that is one of the most important things that we have. That's the point, the component of civilization that fascinates me. Is the law to stop people from doing crimes, or is the law there to tell you what happens to you when you do break a crime? And it's interesting, because I've had more than one argument with people who says, you can't control morality with law. And I'm not sure I accept that. I've gotten in more than one arguing about it, especially when it comes to murder. I mean, that's morality at its ultimate test, isn't it?
Right. So I guess the history of mankind, you know, we've had law going back to, you know, biblical times and so forth. And the law is designed to restrain people and to, you know, have a sense of a common sense of what's right and wrong and true. There folks can have differences of opinion about, you know, what is right and what is wrong, and we here in America we've got freedoms, and we cherish those freedoms. They're in the Constitution, but within those freedoms we still have restraints.
Right. So when it comes up, the November election, you ran unopposed. I think there were 87,000 some odd votes cast in your favor in, what did you say, 37 counties or 27?
37.
Big district, man, which Taylorville, means a lot of issues.
Taylorville to Cairo,
right?
I tell folks.
All right. So, you know, I hope to get you back in the studio. You're the first judge that we've talked to after the last election cycle. And like I said, what you do and what you represent, you know, I wonder, because people go into the polling booth, and I've watched this, you know, and you go into the polling booth and they get to the judges and their eyes glaze over because they're not really sure what am I voting for here? Who am I voting for? Because there's such a level of prominence for a Congress or state representative. But when it comes to judge, a different thing. And then a Republican, Democrat, I think people struggle with who to vote for in these type of situations. They go in, and I'm hoping to rectify this by having you in here today, is they go in a little underinformed.
It's very difficult, and so that's why in this campaign, you know, I make a great effort to get out and meet folks. You know, whether, you know, this time of year it's county fairs, it's picnics, it's parades.
Justice David Overstreet joins today, and the reason why is because you can't necessarily talk about what rule and what law. But I always derive a certain amount of knowledge from getting the privilege of interviewing people like you and knowing people like Judge Don Lowry, as I was talking about earlier, because I can't ask you necessarily about what you're going to do and what you're going to rule, but it seems like I can divine something from your character by meeting you in person and whether I trust you to be that guy or that woman, as the case may be.
Now, this is an excellent forum. Anytime I have the opportunity to talk about issues and things that matter to you or to anyone else, you know, in our district, I welcome that opportunity.
And here's the thing: we get kind of limits. I mean, it's like you and I are walking to a minefield today because we can't talk about certain things. We can't predispose you. Or next thing you know, we're going to get called up and recordings, and somebody makes something out of nothing. While at the same time, a lot of pressure on you, isn't there?
You feel that. People's lives are in the balance, the issues that matter to them. And so that's the pressure, that's the responsibility, and that's the privilege I have of, taking on that role.
Tough.
It is.
Because it's interesting, because when I listened to you earlier about I use the law and I apply that, but there has to be some type of toll taken on you when you say you're going to prison for the rest of your life. You're going to go for 20 years, you're going to go to 5, 10, because you said this is about people's lives earlier when we were talking. And I've always wondered about that toll.
So as a circuit judge, I did sentence defendants in criminal cases who had been convicted. And I always thought that was, along with custody decisions, the most difficult decisions I made as a circuit judge. Now, as an appellate judge, I am looking at the record on what's happened at the trial court, and maybe someone has been sentenced to life, and I'm looking at the issues surrounding that particular trial, and, you know, I realize that, you know, the decision I make, along with my colleagues, you know, sitting on we are, you know, ultimately determining whether that individual is going to be in prison, you know, 5 years or for life. But you know, we have a duty to the citizens to look at the record before us, look at the law, realize that, you know, and there are some issues where the judge in the circuit court, you know, had a degree of discretion, you know, maybe a great degree of discretion, and we look to see whether that judge abused their discretion, not whether we would have done something differently. Although there are issues of law where we are able to look at it with fresh eyes.
Because judges have often told me that passing judges' decisions on other judges' decisions is one of the hardest things that judges do.
It is, but built into the system is the fact that the trial judge was there to assess the credibility and to weigh the evidence that they heard. They were able to look folks in the eye when they testified. We are not on the appellate court. So, you know, depending on the issue, we give the trial court, we see if they abuse their discretion or not in many cases.
And sometimes it's technicalities. Sometimes it's piece of evidence that was left out. There's a lot of variations there, too. That's why I want to invite you to come back next time.
Oh, I'd love to
come
back.
I'm fascinated by what you do and what the role it plays in civilization, and that if people ignore it or it's improperly applied, the ramifications inside the culture when somebody says, the law no longer exists. What a dark day that'll be. Because, you know, when you talked about the biblical ramifications, I think the last thing I read, 786 laws that we have in our society are direct derivatives of Hebraic law from literally Old Testament times, including workman's comp, which was biblical. People forget that.